Candace, my forthcoming book called The Little Book of Workplace Happiness has a chapter, and the chapter says, "Workplaces stink. Workplace culture stinks like bad kimchi." So that's the
Are
best I could
you
do to tell you.
kidding me? Did
No,
you
it's in there.
really? Did
There's
you
really
really?
an there's an emoji in there of like a stinky piece of
Like
kimchi,
bad kimchi. You know the
like
stinkier.
bad kimchi. I mean, I don't mean
The
yeah.
stinkier the kimchi, the better it tastes.
I mean kimchi gone wrong. You know where like you mess up the recipe, right?
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candace Rudardi, and today I'm joined by the one and only Anthony Paponi. Anthony is the CEO and founder of Focus on the 40, and he is dedicated to reducing individual, workplace, and community suffering. Focused on the 40% of the happiness within our control, he advocates for actively crafting fulfilling lives. Known for his tenacity in pursuing happiness, Anthony delivers impactful presentations combining subject matter expertise with humor. With over two decades of experience, he transforms events into memorable experiences. Service-oriented, Anthony volunteers for organizations like Boys and Girls Clubs in Bend, Oregon. And outdoors, Anthony can be found snowboarding, playing hockey, or rafting. As Chief Happiness Officer, Anthony inspires joy in workplaces and communities, fostering laughter and a culture worth raving about. Welcome, Anthony.
Hi, Candace. How are you?
So the last time you were here, it was episode 163, and
Okay.
this is episode 203. That's 40 episodes, which is 40 weeks, which is, three quarters of a year. So what have you been
And
up to?
my business is called Focus on the 40. I mean that there's so much going on there. We're gonna have to go buy lottery tickets.
I think so. Either that or plan our domination over the empire. So catch us up. What's been going on in the last 40 weeks that you want to catch us up on?
Ooh. Yeah, last 40 weeks. It was really interesting 40 weeks. For the first time, it's been the highest of highs and some of the lowest of lows, and we can talk about any of that in between too. I spoke at my first international conference, and that was really great. I was in Thailand and Japan back in November, and turned that into an extended stay after speaking in Thailand, seeing a friend of Thailand, touring around Thailand, and then going to Japan. So that was incredible, and real nice to be on a main stage, something like that. That just feels like a little bit of a feather in a cap, a sense of arrival in a different way, and playing with New Year's resolutions and trying to come up with. There's one technique about coming up with a word. What's the word that will define 2024? And I had, and you look back at 2023 first, and one of the words was arrival. Like feeling like I've arrived at this place. But I think that place of arrival is there's always another tier, another level, if that's what you're aspiring to. And so it feels good to be in this place doing what I'm doing. And I'm curious and intrigued and energized by what might come next. So
You brought up a lot. I have questions. First,
bring them on.
I want to talk about word of the year. So last year, my word of the year was release.
Oh, good.
And I just removed all of these. I have a half a dozen or so little postcards that say release on them. I have friends that send me postcards. I think we did an act, my coaching clients and I did this activity last year where we talked about our word of the year. And then we sent our word of the year to each other on postcards.
Oh, that's
It was
good.
an activity that we did. So release is really strange. It's because sometimes your word of the year manifests in a way that is different than you thought that it was going to manifest. So what I imagined release would be for me wasn't at all what it was, but it still manifested itself. So when you put your word together, arrival last year, did you imagine that it would help you end up in Thailand?
So I did it in retrospect. So the activity for setting your word for 2024 is to come up with three words for 2023. So I just kind of wrote those down for this. I just did this in the last few days. But I agree with you completely. Like you can look back on things and just say, oh, like I set this intention, and the universe has different ways of bringing those things to you, and you don't really know what that means. But it's a nice. Either way, it's probably a valuable thing for people to have that thing to reflect upon. And it's something that reflect upon, think about going forward and then reflect upon coming back and being like, was that the right word? How does that word actually play out? What were the elements of that that I didn't think about or that were surprising or things that were not surprising?
Yeah. So, speaking of surprising, talk to me about Thailand. What was surprising about that trip for you?
Well, Thailand is insane, by the way. And I mean, in a good way. I was in Bangkok. I was speaking at the convention center there, which is beautiful, redone, state of the art, a gorgeous facility. And I had expectations going in of what the audience might be like, and it was people from all throughout Asia. And I was told that they spoke English, but English was their second language. And so I went in concerned about, you can get this vibe from me. I like to speak fast. I'm quick-witted. And so they were like, you're gonna have to slow your pace down. You only have 30 minutes to present. And I was like, oh wow, 30 minutes is me just starting, and so I was worried about that. And I went to the conference. It's an organization called the International Convention and Conference Association, or Convention and Congress. That's what they call their meetings over there, congresses. They're human beings like anybody else, right? And their great level of fluency in English. I was listening to earlier presenters. I was the closing keynote. I was listening to earlier presenters, and so that put me at ease for just delivering how I deliver. And in the middle of my presentation, technical glitch. Biggest stage I'm standing on, international stage. And I'm like, what are you gonna do about it? You're gonna roll with the punches because that's what you do. And that part was great. And then I was staying in Bangkok for a while with a friend that former friend of mine. Well, he's still a friend, but a friend from he lived in the United States, and we're
Former,
still
my
friends.
former friend, but we're still friends. That's pretty good.
We
Okay.
were friends before the trip. We are not friends after that. I'm kidding. We're still friends. So it was interesting to see what his life was like and how he patterned his life. And there's a lot of expats that live over there. And then the Thai people in Thailand are amazing. I highly encourage a cooking class over there. It's not the sort of thing that I would ever do, but normally, and I did it and I loved it. I thought it was just a great exposure that took away this barrier to fear around their food. I have food allergies, and so I have to just be kind of cautious about what I eat. And that was great. And the Thai people are super just wonderful, and the friendly, kind, sweet, and it was really interesting to go from Thailand, and I'll show up here in a sec, but to go from Thailand tropical, and over to Japan. And Japan was in I was in the on the island where Tokyo and Kyoto and Osaka are, and that was cooler weather and different vibe, a little more prescribed feeling, about how things clean, all that sort of stuff. But they were both just great trips.
Did you also speak in Japan?
No, I did not. That was just purely for
Just
fun.
for fun. The thing that you just said that was just so interesting to me, because when I think about Asia, I think about 100 different languages. I mean, within China, there's like four major languages, right? And so when you are speaking at an event where Asians from the entire Asian continent have come in for the presentations, that the fact that their common language is English is very interesting to me. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And it was a crazy mix of like sitting across the table. It's not that I haven't been, I've traveled a good enough bit. I've lived overseas a little bit, but it was crazy to just sit at a table with somebody from Singapore and somebody from Denmark and somebody from Scotland and somebody, somebody from Malaysia. And it was just a fascinating experience. It was very broadening, and it was really good for me to have.
That's something that I really have enjoyed about the post-pandemic world. The first time I attended a virtual conf an international virtual conference, I was put into a like a table. It was a room, a small room, group room, six people in the room, and there was someone from Brazil, someone from England, someone from Australia, and it was just really interesting to have a conversation about a topic and the perspective from all the different countries, but really the perspective was everybody had the same perspective, right? It didn't matter that we all came from these different parts of the globe. We all had a similar experience. Who calls somebody during? I just got a phone call in the middle of the.
That's so rude.
Who
I can't
calls you
believe that
during?
your entire network doesn't know to not call you right
Yeah,
now.
well, you're the most important person in the room right now.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So anyway, long story short, I really love the globalism that has happened because of the pandemic. And I'm a homebody, so I like to visit other countries from the comfort of my own office.
You should DoorDash some food from your local in Asian culinary
Oh,
places.
I'm Asian, right?
No.
So I taught my daughter how to make, I'm Korean. I taught my daughter how to make kimchi the couple days before Christmas. So that was a lot of fun. And before I did it, I wanted to make sure I got the salt balance right in the cabbage because you have to salt the cabbage for a little bit so that it makes it crispier if you salt the cabbage. I don't know the whole thing. So I wanted to make sure I got the salt ratio right because I didn't remember the exact salt ratio. It's 1 cup of, if you're ever interested in wanting to know what the salt ratio is, it's 9 tablespoons of salt and 1 cup of water for 2 heads of cabbage. Okay, there.
I'm probably not going to store that away, but I know how to get in touch with you if I need it.
But so I was good. I watched a couple of YouTube videos, and Korea is not a very big country. All right. And I make kimchi the way that my grandmother made kimchi, because that's the way my mother made kimchi. And when I ran it by my cousin, it's the way she made kimchi, and she learned how to make it from my grandmother too. And none of the videos that I watched made it the same way that I make it.
Really?
And so something as basic as fermented cabbage,
Yeah, which is just
there
kind of the
were,
staple, right?
and we even within the videos, everyone was different. And I don't know if my family recipe is as basic as it is because, Korean War, but which is when my grandmother left the country and left my mother. She left my mother in Korea to come to the United States with her American husband after, so my mother came 3 years later. But and I don't know if it's because the Korean War was going on, actually it was before the Korean War. I don't know if it's because they had, Japan had been occupying Korea for so long and there just wasn't a lot of resources, and so they made Korean very Korean. They made kimchi very basic, and nowadays, that you have a lot more wealth, and so people who I don't know if that's the reason or if it's just regionally the kimchi recipe in that region that my grandmother was from was that basic. But my recipe has 5 ingredients. Every other recipe I watched had more than 10 ingredients.
Well, so water, cabbage, salt. What else? What are the other two?
Gochugaru, which is red chili
Okay.
peppers, green
Yeah,
onions,
fermented. Yeah.
garlic,
Okay. Yeah.
and a carrot. I
And a
grate a
carrot.
carrot. And that's, and I ran it by my cousin. She also grates a carrot. So, and in the Korean recipes, it's pear. The video,
It's
it's a
pear.
Korean pear. So the point of the carrot is to add a little sweetness. And the
Yeah.
point of the pear, I think, is to keep the cabbage crispy. I don't know. It's just, everybody's recipes are different. So anyway, the
And
whole point of that was
yeah, where are we going with that one?
the
I'm
whole
curious
point
about this. Tie this together.
global, regional things are, people are different. You can't, everybody's unique. And I think one of the reasons why one of the ways that we become happy, we stay happy, is that we embrace our uniqueness. I don't know. What do you think? Where do we go with it? Was that a good loop?
Well, Candace, my forthcoming book called The Little Book of Workplace Happiness has a chapter, and the chapter says, "Workplaces stink. Workplace culture stinks like bad kimchi." So that's the
Are
best I could
you
do to tie.
kidding me? Did
No,
you
it's in there.
really? Did
There's
you
really
really?
there's an emoji in there of like stinky piece of
Like
kimchi,
bad kimchi. You know the
like
stinkier.
bad kimchi. I mean, I don't mean
The
yeah.
stinkier the kimchi, the better it tastes.
I mean kimchi gone wrong. You know where like you mess up the recipe, right? There's yeah, I live in Bend, Oregon, and we don't necessarily have a ton of diversity here, but we have, that's the most mild understatement on that. But we have a Korean restaurant, and it's really good. And they had, and so we were talking about your kimchi being really bland. When we went there last time, they had like, they give you a little dish of like three different types of things to try, and some of your radishes, but they had, then you can order another one, and they give you all these other things. And I was like, so much diversity in just kimchi, you know, like
Yeah.
all the things that can happen there. So.
Well, the daikon radish, I don't know how we white, we're talking about Korean food. The daikon radish is this really big white radish, right? And you can prepare it in a myriad of different ways. And I actually one day, this is, I'll find the picture on Facebook. I posted a picture of three preparations of the same radish that look completely different from each other. Same radish, different preparation. Each tastes unique. They're all delicious. So even within one vegetable, you can do very unique things. So
Good
why
point.
be boring?
I don't like being well, I think we're boring sometimes because it's safe, you know. There's
Oh,
a lot less risk involved, you know.
yeah.
And that's wired into humans is to be to not do things that are risky to get you kicked out of the group. because we're tribal, we're meant to survive in groups. And so like we can, if we're ostracized by the group, it was perceived as being bad for us. And so we just have to, I think that that's got, there's some legacy wiring in this brain of ours.
You know, I keep bringing up this conversation.
About kimchi,
No, not kimchi.
about
It's about
radishes,
makeup.
about makeup.
So, Paige Arnoff-Fenn, that was an interview from a couple of months ago. She was talking about how when she worked for Procter and Gamble, they would bring in focus groups of young women to talk about makeup. And inevitably, there would always be one woman in the group who had the big personality and would say, "I love sparkly makeup." And so then every other woman in the group would agree and say, "Oh, we love sparkly makeup too."
That
But
would ruin the
then,
whole focus group.
hold on, but then at the end of the event, after everybody left, the folks that worked there would go and gather up all the samples that didn't get stolen, and it would be the sparkly makeup that was left, and the stuff that was
That
stolen was the boring makeup. And so even though they agreed with the person that was, you know, the big personality that she loved the sparkly makeup, in actuality, they didn't really like the sparkly makeup. What's your take on that?
Oh man, I wasn't ready for a makeup question.
Well, what I really want to know is, how
No,
do
I
you, if there is a person in the room with a big personality,
sure.
how do you tamp down that personality so you can get to the what everybody else is really thinking?
That's a good question. and you see this, and I know you deal mostly with micropreneurs and small businesses. But this can happen, and it doesn't have to be within your workplace, right? It can be within a family unit, whatever, your community. You have to be aware of that, right? And I never take silence as agreement. You know, so if I say something to a group and I hear from one person and I see a lot of head nodding and smiling, like, all right, I'm paying attention to the nonverbal communication there. But I also, when you do personality profiles, I do a leadership profile with the groups that I work with. If you identify the people that will not speak up as much, then you can start a meeting by saying, hey, instead of picking the boisterous person in the room to start first, we'll call her Candace. We'll pick the quieter person in the room and ask them to start. And they may not want to start, right? You have to kind of know the dynamic of that human being. Or as you walk away, kind of like that data that they were gathering at the end of the focus group is, okay, we heard this verbal assent. Assent, is that the word? With this, but agreement with this. But what's the data really telling us? You know, and so the data was what makeup gets left behind. And so find those ways to have those one-on-ones and those asides with people where you're like, hey, this is what was said in the group setting. Do you actually agree with this? You know, and give them that space where they can do it more comfortably versus doing it in front of a room of 20 people or 50 people or five, whatever the number is.
My experience is that the people who are quiet are the ones who actually know what's going on. I mean, they're the ones that are doing the research and figuring things out and finding the flaws. And the quiet ones are the ones you really need to focus on, in my opinion. But it's been a long time since I've worked in corporate. The dynamics could
Yeah,
have changed.
I don't know about that. I think that's painting with a pretty broad brush, and
Yeah,
just
well, you
because
know.
someone, yeah, sometimes somebody says what needs to be said, and you need those people to have that lack of fear to go do that. And sometimes the quiet people are just they're in when I'm in phase is maybe the way I would say it about myself. I'll be the first person to speak up, right? I have no problem doing that because I want to like lubricate a meeting. And say, I'm willing to share my opinion on something. I also have to be very cognizant of saying, and I'm okay being, but I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking about something and let's beat it up. Let's talk about it, right? And other people, and there's times when I just like, I will sit back in a group setting and I'm listening and I'm listening and I'm listening and I'm gathering and I'm gathering and I'm gathering and then I'm connecting dots, I'm connecting dots, and then I'm ready to say something, you know? And so I think it really just depends.
Yeah, I find it very interesting that I made that broad brush statement after talking about how there's so many different diverse ways to do things that I actually went against my own statements within the same conversation, within minutes of each other.
I love pointing out your hypocrisy.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
It's my gift. It's my New Year's resolution is to be meaner to people.
It really? Okay, I want to talk about New Year's resolutions. As a
Sure.
happiness expert, what's your thoughts on New Year's resolutions? Because this is the second week of January. I mean, for
Yeah.
those listening to the episode when it drops, the second week of January. How many people have already given up on their resolutions? Probably most of them.
Yeah, I, you know, I, I did want, and I'll share this with you in the show notes. I think resolutions are a good thing, and if nothing else, instead of moving through our lives and on in default mode, in auto, on running automation, excuse me, I think it's really good to take these times in our lives, and even with your business, if we're talking about business, of like have a reminder in Outlook that says work on your business, not at your business, right? It's time for me to step back, to look at the goals I've set, to talk to somebody about, I have a business accountability coach, to talk about what I'm doing, talk about where I'm going, to see if I'm holding to the things that I set, because I love shiny objects, and then stay the course on the longer term stuff, right? Because for me, I easily can drift amongst things, and it's really important for me to set goals. Some of these things that are goals will not be, happen overnight. And that's with a New Year's resolution. Like one of my goals is to try to lose some weight, right? Most people want to lose some weight. I know what the patterns are behind why I've gained weight, right? I've been traveling a lot. I've been on the road a lot. A lot of my activity is outdoor based. And so when I'm on the road, it's hard for me to do those outdoor. I can't bring a mountain bike with me. I could bring a mountain bike, but I can't. I currently don't. And so what's the pattern shifts there? And if I decide that I'm going to be healthier, part of that is diet, part of that is what you put in yourself, and then part of that is what you do. Well, I can't decide to be healthy today and then be healthier tomorrow, right? Or lose weight tomorrow. That's fine. You have to have the term in positive psychology is called grit. It's the ability to set long-term goals and to hold to them, And sometimes, like even with what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, was what's your word? Your word is release, okay? Well, how did that show up really differently throughout the course of a year? And that's fine, and even with goals, sometimes you set a goal with really good intentions and it's the wrong goal, right? And you just have to be willing to let those go. Now, that doesn't mean letting go just because you're like, I don't really want to do the thing because it's hard. You should probably still do some of those things. But it's honoring the fact that within some of these goals, we can make some quick changes that have impacts on our happiness and our life satisfaction quickly, and then something you just have to hang on to. And I'll put a period on this in a second, is to say that one of the activities that I love to do, and I do it twice a year, it's called Pillars of a Balanced Life. And it's a PDF that I'll give you, I'll put it in the show notes, where you just kind of look at your life in eight different domains. Well, two of those domains are related to your financial fitness and then also your career, satisfaction. And but then you look at all the other domains in life and you score it out, and there's scoring on there. And then there's a column on the side that says, put some notes down about why, and I do this. I do it now this time of year. And then I do it on my birthday, August 27th, for people listening, XL size t-shirt. And that's really nice because I can look at my life at scale of a few months apart, and see what's changed and what's not changed. And I also like to couple it with a voice memo. And that voice memo is just a little like, here's what you wrote down for your scores. Here's what, scan the version of this PDF from last year. Look at your scores from last year. What's changed in a year? What's changed in 6 months? Because some of these things, they just become who you are, and you don't even recognize some of the accomplishments or changes that you've made that are just not embodied.
So you're coming at it from different senses. You've got sound, you've got tactile writing. When you thank you for sharing that gift with the audience. I appreciate
Of
that.
course.
Okay, so you said that you have a note in Outlook to remind you to work on your business and not for your business. How often is that note? How often does that little pop-up happen for you?
Well, I try to set pops up frequently. I mean, it's a reminder to actually stop and make time and put time on the calendar, because if I don't block time in the calendar, then I just kind of do other stuff. And then I have a quarterly meeting with my business accountability coach. So like right now, what we've done is we've kind of mapped out 2024. I've yet to have my first meeting with her, but we've mapped out 2024, or I've laid out 2024 in the way that I know she would want to see it. It has financial metrics in it, obviously. But it's what we talked about the last time we were together, is like, what's, you define success for you. Now, don't lie to yourself about what you really want. If you want to be a multimillionaire, you better define that, right? Or you better be okay with that as a definition for success. But what do you want 2024 to look like broadly? And then I set a bunch of different goals in there, things that I would like to achieve. And then she said, three big ones. That's it. Just three big ones. Those have to be the cornerstones. They're the ones that you know you absolutely have to do this year. Or make progress towards. Some of these things might be, they might bear fruit in 2025, and that's fine. What's your original question?
How often that m note pops up on your calendar?
Yeah. So I have like a 3-hour meeting with her once every quarter. And then in between is when I'm paying attention to different things. Like once a month, I'm kind of sitting down and just like stopping, taking a look at that document and remembering like, oh, did I forget one of my big goals? Oh, I haven't. I actually surprised sometimes that I'm like, no, I'm actually working on this. It's just going to take a long time, like publishing a book. The steps along the way, it's daunting, right? But you can't look at it as if my goal is to sell X number of books, you can't. That can't be the like sell X number of books because there's 743 steps before that to come, and that can be demotivating if you try to just tackle too much at once.
Well, and you can only control what you can control. So when I make my goals, I make sure that I can control 70% of the things on the list.
I like that. Yeah.
I can, like this morning, I actually did the numbers exercise this morning. I was really focused on it. I was so focused on it, I almost forgot our meeting. I was
I love the urine flow state.
but I was so I was looking at my numbers this morning, and I hadn't done this ex I didn't do this exercise last year, and I was like, I really one of the things that probably prevented me from reaching some of my goals this year was that I didn't have the numbers in front of me, and so I put the spreadsheet together with the numbers so that I could look at it, and it just seems like it's a lot more attainable now because I can actually work backwards. Like I have a number, and I can say, well, okay, if this number is this number, then what number is this number going to be? Okay, is that realistic? Yeah, it is realistic if this is this number. So it was a really good experience. But then, 12, our meeting started at 1, 12:59 shows up, and I'm like, one of my favorite guests is going to be on Zoom in 1 minute, and I'm
I
like
don't
not
think
ready for him.
so.
But
I
we
think we
pulled
can
it
just go.
off, didn't
I think we're doing just fine.
we? Okay,
Yeah, that's, so
go
I
ahead.
had just a quick reflection on that is I had a really interesting sort of I don't epiphany is too big of a word, but when I was talking to my business coach last year, she's like, "Where are you trying to go with 2023?" And I was like, "Here's what the business has been doing. Here's what I think is natural growth, right? Growth isn't always necessarily the only metric as far as like financial growth. There could be other things." She said, "Where are you going to be in 5 years?" I was like, "I have no idea, right?" And she's like, "All right, where are you going to be in 2 years?" Oh, okay. Clarity around that. Oh, 3 years. Oh, okay. Oh, I can tell you five now. And so having all those pieces together and even just making time to have that headspace around those things, I think is really important. So I'm glad you're doing it and your listeners are encouraged to think about like, stopping, pausing, working on the business, not at.
Yeah, I didn't. Back to the resolution conversation. I find it interesting that you say re resolutions are great. And I'm like, I'm not really a fan of resolutions, but I did set goals, which aren't res. But one of my goals is a very specific activity that I'm 100% in control of, and if I don't do it, it's on me, right?
And I don't know that I think
So that is a resolution.
I have some reservations around resolutions. I like the concept of introspection and goal setting.
Yeah. And it should be
Accountability.
done more often than just once a year, maybe.
And it's across all things of being like, all right, like what am I really trying to craft? And when we talked previously, this happiness that you want in your life doesn't include all easy stuff, right? Some of this stuff is only happy in retrospect. Like, oh, I'm really glad I did this hard thing. Like, I'm going to be very happy and proud that I produced a book, right? I've produced other printed stuff. This is a different version. This is something bigger. It wasn't easy to do it. I'm going to be glad that I had the grit to do it and that I will feel good in retrospect looking back. Now, there are parts of the process that I've enjoyed, right? And but
So
I think that whole.
that's a new thing. The last time
What?
we chatted, you didn't have a book even, I don't think you even had a sparkle of it. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've produced other things, but they've always been workbook driven. Like, I want to give you something and I want you to sit down with it individually. And this one has been more, it's more workplace focused, and so it's structured in the same way to have activities baked into it. I've just been kind of honoring, like, a big half of my business is speaking on stage at conferences and the other half is working with workplaces and helping them, like, work can be hard. It can be like bad kimchi. And so,
There
how do we make that?
is no bad kimchi.
Oh, I'm sure you've seen a recipe go wrong, and you're like, "Oh, I didn't think I'd have to throw away kimchi, but I got to throw away kimchi."
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, all
I'll
right,
give
fine,
that to you.
begrudgingly. I
Okay.
know you have an affinity for kimchi. I don't want to take away your joy around that. Yeah, so so I just was like, "Well, this is the tool that I think that workplaces need, and And so I just kind of sat down and said, what are the big pain points that I've been working with groups on? And then how do I put this into a resource that's available? And it's called the Little Book of Workplace Happiness, because I don't want it to be this like 250 page tome of a book when it doesn't need to be, when I just kind of distill it down. And it's just kind of like, here's what you need to know. Here's an activity to try. Here's what you need to know. Here's an activity to try. 16 insights, 16 actions. So it's going to be really cool to do that. Do I think that I want to be an author going forward around workplace happiness books? I don't think that that's necessarily something that I want to do, but I'd certainly think there's memoir type stuff coming in. Not that I think my life is so grandiose that I should be sharing my life story, but I think if anything else, I want to like normalize the experiences of human life and the ups and downs, you know, all of the different things. And we talked offline about, you know, talking about, you know, childhood and all those sort of things and what came from that and where we're going, and that we all have these experiences and that we all have challenges, right? And this whole thing about toxic positivity and all those sort of things, that we just need to be able to honor the fact that life has hard moments, and what you do in those hard moments is what's really defining for who you are.
I want to talk about toxic positivity because, wow, that is a real problem. But before we do that, I want to talk about Ken Blanchard's Who Moved My Cheese? Do I have the author right on that? Who Moved My Cheese? Do I have the
Don't
author?
know. I know Ken Blanchard, but I don't
That
know.
might not be the correct author, but the book Who Moved My Cheese is like 100 pages.
Oh yeah, tiny. Yeah.
25 years ago, it was, or 30 years ago, whenever it was, my husband and I read it. We made all of our employees read it. I mean, we just, it was so short, and the parables were on point, and it was
About a
exactly.
dog and a duck and a, is it
No, it's
that
about
one?
mice. It's
Mice.
about m
Okay.
mice. And it was just, it's really, it's like the most basic business book, but it's not even a business book. It's a life book. It's, you know, it's about making choices and shifting perspectives and paradigm shifting and all that. But it's 100 pages. That's all it needed to be. But sometimes I look at these books that are like 1,000 pages, and I'm like, wow, the author is really proud of themselves, aren't you?
Well, and I think it's the expectation of like, that's what a book is supposed to look like. Some publisher is probably saying that, you know. And I think now that we have this liberty of having self-publishing, then you can say, all right, I'm going to do this. You know, this is dangerous language. I'm going to do it my way, because I'm not saying my way is the best way. I'm just saying that's the choice I'm making. So, yeah.
So anyway, I think there might be a trend towards shorter books because we don't have long attention spans these days. And if that wasn't true, all those websites and companies that have their whole product offering is 15-minute synopsises of books, that wouldn't exist. That's all we have. We have 15 minutes, right? And that's so.
And that's also, I agree with you that I have found real joy over the last 10 days. This is how nerdy I can be. I have found real joy over the last 10 days of sitting down with a book on positive psychology called Tomorrow Mind, written by Martin Seligman and Gabriella. Can't think of the other author's name. It's a deep dive into
It'll be in
all
the
these.
show notes.
It's in the show. It's an incredible book. And it takes me a half hour to get through 3 pages, because the whole time I'm annotating it, I'm writing down ideas, I'm carrying stuff over into presentations that I want to add. That's me, and that's also what I need to be doing as a subject matter expert. I'm working on developing my expertise. Other areas, like what I'm trying to do even with my own book, my own book is to say, you don't need to know all the backstory. I'm just telling you the stuff you need to know. You can start using them, you know. And if you want to go do the research, go do the research. There's people who have stuff.
You know what? If you're finding joy in it, then fabulous. It means that it's exactly what you need. And somebody else might look at it and go, what? So that's, again, back to the we're all unique and wonderful. And holy crap, I just choked on my breath. We're all
I'm choking
unique.
up and I'm choking
I'm
on
choking.
air.
Yeah, so choking on air. So, you know, we're all unique and wonderful, and the fact that we can find happiness in unique ways is, it's wonderful. I love it.
Yeah, honor it. I mean, and don't, we talked about fear before and ostracization, right? Like the thing that I tell people all the time when you're thinking about crafting this fulfilling life, right? That's a mixture of joy and purpose. What makes you happy and what makes you fulfilled, provides you enjoy and purpose, is different for you than it is for me, and it's different for other people. Now, that doesn't mean that other people have it right. It doesn't mean that other people have it wrong. Don't go chasing what they have, thinking it will give you joy. make sure that you know why you would want something like that,
Yeah.
right? Or add something to your life or craft your life in a certain way. And the other thing is, don't lie to yourself. Like, if they're doing something, like, let's, it's not all about money. Money has the ability to make you somewhat happier. That's a very broad brush statement about a lot of research about money. The absence of money can make you miserable. So I'm not telling you, like, I think for you to be happy, you need to make $1.2 million a year. No. But for you to be happy, you should be able to have the basics in life that provide you for, the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, so that you don't have just fear embedded in everything you do because you're so worried about survival. Like, that's what the presence of money can at least provide those things. We have to be super cautious about that because our brains really adapt really quickly to material things, and again, we can be on a spiral of just chasing, 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 thinking that when we get to a milestone with money or anything else, really, that we'll be happy at that point. By the time we get there, we've already adapted to that point, right? So you have to
Yeah.
pay attention to that little trap.
Well, and paying attention is so important. Like my daughter's been home from grad school for the last 3 weeks. We only have one
Nice.
week left with her. And every single night after dinner, we've been playing a game, a board game, card game,
Nice. Yeah.
whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, takes a couple hours to get these games played, and it's 2 hours that we would have normally been watching TV or I would have been doing something on my computer, but instead I'm spending quality time with the two people in the world that I love more than anybody else in the world.
Yeah, that's
And
good.
maybe
That's
my husband
simple,
and
yeah.
I need to play games more together when she's not around.
So, can I tell you a quick story? I was back on the East Coast for the holidays, and we were playing Scattergories. I don't know if you know that game,
I've
but
never played it.
it's really fun. Essentially, what you do is you get a card that tells you different categories, right? So things you'll find in the house, things you'll find in the school, types of fruit, whatever. And then there's a timer, it's a little sand timer, and then there's a dice with all 26 letters on it. Maybe it doesn't have X and Z. And you roll the dice, you start the timer, and then you try to go through each of these categories by coming up with things that meet the category with the letter. So everything starts with L in these categories. If you have something and someone else has the same thing, then neither of you get a point, right? So you have to kind of be creative at the same time. And this little girl who I don't know, she was a neighbor of my sister-in-law, and their two kids came over, and she's cute. 10-year-old little thing, funny, smiling all the time, barely know her at all. And I've been giving her a hard time because she hadn't been getting many answers. And the clue was with the letter L, things that are boring. And her response was Lanthony. This
She
moment,
taught you.
I was like, oh, you little punk. Like, I was like, oh, here I am feeling bad because I've been like teasing this little kid that I don't know very well. And she dropped that, and the entire room, of course, just like fell out. I mean, just like just I and I texted her father later, and I was like, "That kid, like, tell your daughter I'm still not talking to her because I'm still angry." But it was so good, Like, I just love that stuff.
Hope she understood that you were joking.
Oh, she did. Yeah, I mean,
Okay,
she did
good.
because she's a pretty grounded kid. But
Oh,
it,
we
yeah, carry
before
on.
we don't have very much time left.
All
Let's
right,
talk
Jen,
about
go ahead. You're panicking.
toxic positive. I'm panicking because I got to the party late and we have to close a little early, so
Okay, that's fine. It's
I
fine.
don't get to spend as much time with you this interview as I wanted to. But
We're still having quality time.
yes,
Yeah, toxic
toxic
positive.
positive. I want to tell you a story.
All
So
right,
I was involved with a company and the company was all about positivity, positive, positive, positive. So much so that they never bothered to share anything negative.
go. That's toxic
And the
positivity.
lack of communication was so frustrating because they wouldn't address anything that was not positive. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. All right. So let's see the quick version of this. Your brain is wired for negativity. It's a good thing. Negativity is what kept your ancestors survived. Us having fear about things that could harm us means that we strategize solutions to prevent the things that could harm us from harming us. Okay. So it's good for us to kind of be looking around the room and being like, oh, I should be cautious about that. I shouldn't touch a hot stove. That knife could harm me. That person could harm me. Oh, fine. Okay. Those are threats that. By ignoring those threats, we could be ignoring things that could have harmed us, or could have harmed our progeny, it could have harmed people in our group when we were working as groups. 7,000 years ago, our brains quit really changing, and back then we were very tribal because we all worked together to solve common problems. And so that negativity bias is wired really strongly into us. We have to look to overcome that a little bit to be a little bit more optimistic. And I will frame toxic positivity in the same way that I would say, like, blind optimism, or just like, that it's also false too, right? So pragmatic optimism, okay? Ideally thinking about a positive future, having agency to make that future happen, but not being so blind, being like, hey, okay, I don't have any strategies to do this, but my business is going to make $5 million this year. Why? I don't know. I know it will. Okay, that's just optimism. That's, off face. Toxic positivity is the same thing, right? And I think, it's what Instagram is all day long. Everything's amazing. This is the mo I have the most amazing meal after the most amazing meal. And what was really interesting for me is, like, even looking back on life, like, we don't spend a lot of time rehashing the really negative things that happened to us, right? And for example, like, when I was doing this what's your word for 2024, it said look back month by month, and think about what was happening in that month. And I didn't look at my calendar on my computer, which probably is actually in retrospect something I should do. Where was I? What was I doing? But I looked at the photos on my phone. But I was like,
Oh.
well, what? And the question was, well, what's the challenge that was happening this time in your life? And I was like, well, I don't have a photo for the challenges. Nobody takes photos of the things they don't want to remember, right?
Yeah.
And so, in a way, that's toxic positivity. I can look back with this rose-colored lens on all the things that happened in 2023, and I had some really beautiful, amazing, big, life-changing, belief-changing things happen for me in 2023, and I had some the most gut-wrenching, gut punches from 2023 too.
Yeah.
I don't have photos of too many of the gut punches,
Yeah.
and so our brain wants us to move on from those things too. We want to focus on what's in front of us. And Martin Seligman, one of the founders of positive psychology, says that we shouldn't be called Homo sapien. We should be called Homo prospectus. Prospectus is prospecting, looking to the future, because we're always thinking to the future. And optimism and pessimism both have value, but we can that toxic positivity piece is being like, there's nothing going on that's bad.
Yeah.
No, there is a good thing, and I promise to stop here in a second. There's a good thing about saying bad things happen. We're not going to dwell on those things. We're not going to be lost in toxic negativity, right? Bad things happen, and we can reframe those bad things as lessons to be learned, right? That can come across as toxic positivity. Well, yeah, our revenue goals for this quarter were not this. We learned a lot in that process. We can pivot, and we can make different decisions about what we want to do for the future. That's not toxic positivity. That's a little bit of pragmatism baked into that. But when we're just like, everything is great, your story of that business, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, when's the shoe going to drop? Oh, when they
Yeah.
go bankrupt and nobody knew because they've just been hiding all that,
Yeah.
and so I think it's a double-edged sword. You better be really careful with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I talked a
So,
lot there.
no, you shared before we started talking that you had lost someone very close to you. And just now I realized that the last time my entire family was together, because you're talking about you don't have pictures of the bad things, but the last time my entire family was together was at my mother's funeral, which was 12 years ago. And, there were some beautiful photos that came out of that because we were all there celebrating this woman who had been the reason why the last time the whole family was together was at her funerals was because she was the person who held us all together, right? Even in those really horrible, losing your mother when she's only 70 is not, it's not a good thing, right? Hanging on to the beautiful part of that whole experience was that the family came together and that we were all there, including the family members that she held near and dear to her heart, right? We were all there for the week or so before she passed away. And then we were all there for 2 weeks after. And then, more family kept coming and it was just this beautiful thing. And I think the most beautiful moment of my entire life, the image in my head that I hold. So my mom is buried in Portland, Oregon. And she's buried at the National Cemetery in Multnomah. Is that the name of the city, Multnomah? And so it's really hilly. And for those of you who have never been to Oregon, it's very hilly. And so we're at the top of a hill in the cemetery. The National Cemetery is huge. It's got a view of many, many mountains. It was kind of rainy, but not really. It was drizzly. It was a drizzly Oregon day. And we were in the lead car, and we got there very early because you always get there early when it's your family member, right? And about 5 minutes before the processional was about to start, I looked behind me. I don't think it was even me. I think it was my older sister. She looked behind me and she said, "Look, everybody turn around." And there were cars for as long as we could see wrapped around this windy little hilly road, in between these trees. And at that moment, I was like, this many people loved my mother enough to make the trip to be here for this. And it was just in the tragedy. That was one of the most beautiful moments of my life.
I love that.
Take the toxic. I mean, the coming back to, find the positivity, but also accept that there are moments that there's something good in everything, even the bad stuff, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
That was a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing. And I think that that's the same thing I'm going through. Is I'm trying to find silver linings to the cloud, and it's really hard right now. That's okay. I'm not going to act like
Yeah.
it's not. The toxic positivity would be like, no, it's all okay. The part
And it's not.
life includes death. And I'm like, no, I'm in a rough place a little bit.
Yeah.
I still have an incredible life. I still have an amazing, happy life. I have this one thing that's just really, the toxic positivity would be just like, no, it's, these things happen,
Yeah.
and then you're crying, in your bedroom. And that's not, that's toxic positivity. The real honoring of like, it was so hard losing your mom at 70. But you can pull these beautiful moments out of it, right? And you use the word celebration, right? And that was one of the things that I think that that's a great way to look at it. It doesn't mean that there's not all this tragedy in there and all the sadness and lamenting that's true and part of this, right? But that's a really nice thing to be able to look back and be like, oh, this person mattered, and
Yeah.
in positive psychology, one of the I frame happiness as kind of like having an x-axis and a y-axis. X is the joy, elation that we think about with happiness. Y is purpose, right? And for the longest time, and there's a lot of really great research on this. If you don't know what your purpose is, you should explore it, and there's tools to do that. There's some really great stuff out there, including stuff I do with groups. And the word is meaning, and Viktor Frankl said a man's search for meaning, right? So like, what are we looking for? What's meaning? Meaning can be really like esoteric, really not tangible, right? And the term that's come out lately is matter. Like, how do we matter in this world? And the way that sometimes we can think about how we matter is what would happen if we were gone.
Yeah.
And then you think about like all the people in your life that you matter to, or when that one person is extracted from your life through death, then think about like that processional of all those cars, right? That your mother mattered to all those people, right? So that's really beautiful. Doesn't mean it's not hard, Doesn't mean it's not coming with tons of grief that lasts for a while, but it's a part of the human happiness that we can't ignore,
Yeah.
those moments that are just going to come.
We need to wrap up. I wish I could talk to you more. Can you come back again, but not wait 40 weeks? Let's
I
get it
know.
on the schedule to have you back.
40
When is your
weeks seems like some sort of Noah's Ark flood. I
okay?
don't
Maybe it should be 40 weeks. But when
know.
is your book due out?
Hopefully by the end of this month. So it's real close. I have all the illustrations. It's been put into a template, so we're getting close to the finish line, but I've been feeling that way for a while.
Right. Well, let's plan something in the next few months so that you can come back and we can talk about your book because we never got a chance to talk about it.
No, I'll send
But
you a copy of the book, and maybe we can pick something that'd be really valuable for your audience.
that would be really groovy because it's always fun to talk to you. So, Anthony Papone, this is your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
I am super grateful for my special lady friend, my girlfriend. She calls me her associate, Kara, because I was just ill and she took wonderful care of me, made beautiful food that kept me sustained, and I am now back on my feet. So I will throw that out to her.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, Spotify, or your preferred podcast player. Our theme music is Track 14 by Rev Brock and Soul Lily. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to the resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Anthony Papone. I've been your host, Candice Rodarte. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy.